Hare Krishna, Dandavats to all of you. We are continuing to read from Srimad Valmiki Ramayana, Uttarakhanda, part 5, and today is the final part. So, we'll start with the prayers. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Nilitam Nima Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Yat Krupa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatayanam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimati Radhanatha Swamini Tiramani Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tiramani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvichesha Shuni Vadi Vachayate Deshadarini Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Kujantam Rama Ramiti Maduram Madhuraksharam Aruhya Kavita Shakam Vande Valmiki Kokilam Valmikir Muni Simhasya Kavita Manachari Nahashrunvan Ramakatanatam Konayate Paramgatim Veda Vede Parepumsi Jate Dasharatatmaje Veda Pracheta Sadasi Sakshat Ramayanatmana Anjananandanam Viram Janaki Shokanashanam Kapisha Makshantaram Vande Lanka Bhayankaram Manojavam Marutatulya Vegam Jitendra Yambuddhimatam Varishtam Vatatmajam Vanari Yudamakyam Shri Ramadutam Shrirasa Namami Anjaneya Madipatanalanam Kanchanadri Kamaniya Vigraham Parijata Turamulavasinam Bhavayami Pavamananandanam Yatra Yatra Raghunata Kirtanam Tatra Tatra Krutamasta Kanjalim Bhashpavari Paripurna Lochanam Rakshasantakam Shri Raghavam Dasharatatmajam Apramiyam Sitapatim Raghukulanmaya Ratna Deepam Ajana Bahum Maravinda Dayala Daksham Ramam Nishachara Vinashakam Namami Hare Krishna. So we are continuing to read from Valmiki Ramayana, and this is Uttarakhanda part 5 and our final class. So in the previous class, we saw about the glorious rule of Lord Ramchandra, how he ruled the kingdom so beautifully. And we stopped at the point where Lord Ram killed Shambhuka, a Shudra, to restore the balance in all the three worlds. And he brought back the son of a Brahmana alive. So we will continue there from there. So we saw that Lord Ramchandra, he took his Pushpaka and he went around searching for the offender, and he found Shambhuka, and he killed Shambhuka, and he relieved the Brahmana from his distress, and the son of the Brahmana came back alive. So after killing Shambhuka, on his way back, Lord Ram stopped at the ashram of Sage Agastya. So at that time, when he stopped at the ashram of Sage Agastya, Agastya actually presented Lord Ram with a very beautiful jewel. So when Lord Ram was presented with this very, very, very beautiful, exotic jewel, Ram did not want to accept it. Because he didn't want to accept it because he was a Kshatriya. And receiving a free gift from a Brahmana was not correct, because Kshatriyas are the one who should give gifts to Brahmanas. So he thought it a little inappropriate, and he resisted, and he said that he wouldn't be taking the gift. But then Agastya explained about the jewel. He said actually that he received it from another king called as Shweta. And this, when he got this gift from Shweta, he being a Brahmana, that is Agastya being a Brahmana, he didn't want to keep the jewel with him for too long. So he wanted to give it to the emperor, and the undoubted emperor was Lord Ram. So he gave the jewel to Lord Ram. And here there are two stories that are being recounted. I will tell these stories in short. When Ram inquired about the jewel, about the story of King Shweta, Agastya told him the entire story of King Shweta, that Shweta was actually a descendant of the Vidarbha dynasty. And this King Shweta actually performed several austerities throughout his life. But however, he never gave proper charity. So here, Sage Agastya is talking to Lord Ram about the importance of performing charity during any event. Because very soon Lord Ramchandra is going to perform the Ashwamedha Yajna. So Agastya is telling him some stories that will be useful for him. Okay, that's the context of these stories. So Agastya told him about how King Shweta actually performed so many several austerities. He did so many sacrifices, but he didn't give proper charity. So when he went to the heaven, he didn't feed the poor properly. You know, when you do these sacrifices, your first duty is to feed everyone. Even Yudhishthir's Rajasuya Yagna, it is mentioned that he sumptuously fed everybody. So these are all very important. The austerity or the sacrifice itself, you know, may be quite laborious, but still more important than anything else is to satisfy the people, satisfy their hunger and satisfy their wants. So this particular King Shweta, he apparently didn't do it properly. But however, after he gave up his body, he went to the heavenly planets. Now the punishment that he was given is, though he went to the heavenly planets, he had to subsist on his own body that he had given up before. He was not given proper food and water when he went to the heavenly planets. So sage Agastya, once when he was walking, he saw this king coming and feasting on his own body in a very strange forest that was deserted. So sage Agastya was very, very curious to see this person coming and eating, you know, like this, and in a very strange forest. So the sage went and asked this person about himself and how he came there. And this king told the sage that he performed several austerities, but he never gave any proper charity, and hence he is in this miserable condition. So to relieve himself of this horrible condition, at that time the king removed his jewels and gave it to sage Agastya. And because sage Agastya accepted it, this king was relieved from his wretched condition. So that's how sage Agastya got this jewel. And sage Agastya did it. He took the jewel only to relieve this king from his horrible condition. But then the sage didn't want to keep the jewel, so he gave it to Lord Ram. Now then, followed by this story, Lord Ram inquired from sage Agastya about this forest. He was like, you said it was a deserted forest. Can you tell me more about the forest? So at that time, sage Agastya, he told, it was the forest that is Dandakaranya forest. This is the place where even Lord Ramchandra lived for a very long time. So at that time, Ram wanted to listen to the story of the Dandakaranya forest, why it became, why no one was staying in the Dandakaranya forest and why it had become so unhabitable. This story we have already seen actually in the Aranyakanda, but I will repeat the story in short. Agastya told Lord Ram that formerly this area of the Dandaka forest that is presently seen today, this area was under the rule of a king by the name Danda. And this Danda was actually one of Ram's ancestors. He was one of the sons of Ikshvaku. But because once he violated the chastity of one of the daughters of Shukracharya, her name was Araja, he actually violated her chastity and raped her. Because of this offense, the sage actually cursed him and her actually. Actually, he was cursed that his entire region would become barren. So that's why that area became a thick, dense forest and no one was living there. So after all these stories that sage Agastya told him, Lord Ramchandra, understanding the importance of austerity and understanding the correct behavior of a king, after bidding farewell to the sage, he returned back to Ayodhya. Now, after Lord Ramchandra came back to Ayodhya, the story begins actually now. He desired to perform the great Rajasuya sacrifice. So he had this very intense desire to perform this great Rajasuya sacrifice that was performed by several kings in the past. So he discussed with his brothers about it, and he gave references of the past kings who successfully performed the Rajasuya Yajna. But while he was seriously talking about this Rajasuya Yajna, he was stopped and he was discouraged from doing so by his dear brother Bharat. Bharata stopped him and said, my dear elder brother, I don't think you should be doing the Rajasuya Yajna, because already, all the kings of this earth look upon you just like their father. Everyone is so subordinate to you. Everyone recognizes you as the emperor. So unnecessarily, there is no use of going and waging a war and causing them suffering. They're already obedient to you. So you should not threaten them in any way. You don't have to go, go and wage a war or ask for a hefty, jewels or wealth or anything from them. They are all very subordinate and they are all willing to accept you as an emperor. So there is no need for you to perform this Rajasuya Yajna. So when Ram heard this, he was very happy with Bharat's advice. So he said, Bharata, that's actually a very good advice. You're right. There is no need for me to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. So the initial reason why Lord Ramchandra wanted to perform the Rajasuya Yajna is because for the sake of piety. Actually, Rajasuya Yajna, although it makes one as the undoubted emperor, besides that, it also confers a lot of piety on the person and the kingdom. It is a very pious sacrifice that benefits everybody. So that is the original reason why Ramchandra wanted to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. But then he was stopped by Bharata because Bharata had another point which was very valid. So Ram agreed to this and he thought, okay, I will not perform the Rajasuya Yajna. So at this time, his brother Lakshmana, he proposed to Lord Ram that he could instead perform the Ashwamedha Yajna. So Ashwamedha Yajna would also be very beneficial. It would be very purifying for the kingdom and it is going to be a very pious activity and everybody will be benefited from it. So Lakshmana told Ram that he gave some stories from history. Always whenever such advice is given in the kingdom by the ministers or by the brothers, what they do is they tell you some stories from the past of how successfully certain kings had performed certain ritualistic ceremonies. So like that, Lakshmana told Ram about how Indra, after killing the great demon Dhritarasura, we read the story of Dhritarasura in the 6th canto. A huge chunk of the 6th canto is actually dedicated to Dhritarasura's story. So Lakshmana told Lord Ramchandra about how Indra, after killing Dhritarasura, he performed the Ashwamedha Yajna and he got completely released from the curse of killing a Brahmana. So we see the story in detail. But here Lakshmana is telling that just by performing this particular sacrifice of Ashwamedha Yajna successfully, Indra could completely get rid of the curse. So it is very, very purifying. And then he also gave the story of a king by the name Sudyumna. I hope you remember the story of Sudyumna. Anyone wants to take a guess who this king was from the Bhagavatam?
What was it, Mataji, you asked?
I asked if anyone remembers the story of Sudyumna from the Bhagavatam, 8th canto, chapter 1.
Is it Sambhavana?
Yeah, this is the story of the person who entered Ila Varta Varsha and became a woman. Ila.
I think I vaguely remember, but I...
Okay, yeah. So, tells the story of Sudyumna. So, in 8th canto, chapter 1, we see that there is the story of Sudyumna. He was cursed to become a woman because he entered Ilavarta Varsha, where Lord Shiva and Parvati were sporting. And because Parvati didn't want any male to enter, he was immediately converted into a woman. So the story that was discussed in the 8th canto is that he would change from male to female bodies consistently. You know, like every 1 month he would be a male, then he would be a female. So this went on for some time. So while he was both in the male and the female bodies, as Sudyumna and Ila, he ended up having several sons. So when he was in the body of Ila, that is a female body, one of the sons that was born to her was actually Pururavas. Ila united with Buddha, that is the Mercury planet, presiding deity of the Mercury planet, and they had a son by the name Pururavas. And from Pururavas, the entire Soma dynasty came about. So the descendants of Soma are actually, the descendants of the moon god, because Buddha is the son of the moon god, right? So they are the descendants of the moon god. That's how the Chandravamsha starts in the 8th canto. Okay? So, Where am I now? Yeah, so Sudyumna, he was cursed to become a woman called Ila, and because he entered this territory of the Ilavarta Varsha. So he had sons from both being a male as well as a female, and this went on for a very long time. He kept switching his sex a lot because of the curse. But then later, because he completed the Ashwamedha Yajna successfully, he regained his manhood completely. By the grace of Lord Shiva. Shiva blessed him to regain his manhood completely. So this is a story that was told by Lakshmana. So Lakshmana told him that, see, there are so many benefits of Ashwamedha Yajna. So rather, you do Ashwamedha Yajna and that will be beneficial for everyone. After hearing all these stories in history about the purifying nature of this Yajna, Ram finally gave his consent. So grand preparations began for the Ashwamedha sacrifice. And a black horse was chosen and it was let loose. And all the kings, the Vanaras, the Brahmanas, everyone across the world were invited. They were all given invitation that Lord Ramachandra is performing the great Ashwamedha sacrifice. All of them were invited to this holy place of Naimisharanya. And that's where the sacrifice had begun. And Lord Ramachandra distributed a great amount of wealth. He distributed so many foodstuffs to all. He gave so many charity. He fed everyone, each and every one, every citizen, every animal, and each and every, you know, every creature there was honored. And they were all fed very nicely. And no one went dissatisfied or hungry, based on the advice of Agastya. Remember, we just saw the story of what all Agastya told Ramachandra. So Ramachandra remembered everything and he executed everything perfectly. So everyone was invited and the sacrifice had begun and everyone was taken very well care of. Now, meanwhile, while the sacrifice had commenced and it had begun, at that time, Valmiki, remember who's there with Valmiki? Sita, Lavakusha. They are staying with Valmiki. So Valmiki called for Lavakusha and instructed them by telling them, now I want you to go out and continue to recite the entire Ramayana that I have taught you. So you go and travel throughout the entire land, go to the homes of Brahmanas, go to the ashrams of different rishis, go to all the palaces of the great kings and sing Ramayana while you're wandering through all these cities and traveling through all these countryside that I'm asking you to go to. So Valmiki Muni said, first of all, I want you to go to Ayodhya. Go to the kingdom of Ayodhya. If Ram invites you to recite the Ramayana before the assembled Brahmanas, then you do so. But you do not accept any payment in return. If they tell that they want to give you gold coins or if they give you any gifts, just simply say, what good is gold for all of us, for ascetics like us who simply subsist on fruits and roots. There is no use of such gold for us. Just say this answer, don't accept any gifts, but continuously chant the Ramayana that I have taught you. Then Valmiki gave another instruction. He said, if at all Ram inquires whose sons are you at that time, the only answer you should give is, we are Valmiki's disciples. So I want you to sing the verses of Ramayana very sweetly and make sure that nothing displeases our king and you completely satisfy him by reciting his story. He is the king. That means he is like a father to all living beings. So give him all respect. Go sing the Ramayana. Please everybody and come back. So Lavakusha immediately accepted and they said, we will do as you say. And that night they slept very peacefully with Valmiki's advice firmly fixed in their hearts. So they knew the instruction of Valmiki, that Valmiki didn't want them to accept any gifts or gold and they should say that they are the disciples of Valmiki if they are questioned. So after that, Lavakusha, the next day they woke up and they proceeded and they began to recite this epic of Ramayana accompanied by stringed instruments. So they started walking towards Ayodhya. And on the way, while they were going to Ayodhya, in all the little towns and cities, they started singing the beautiful story of Ramayana. And the twins' voices, it had such a transcendental sweetness. It made their recitations appear to be more and more melodious than the singing of the Gandharvas. So all the audience who heard this beautiful recitation, it was in proper chandas, it was set to proper meter, and it was accompanied by nice stringed instruments. So when they were singing like this, everyone was captivated by their recitation. And finally, they reached Ayodhya, and in the little streets of Ayodhya, they were singing this beautiful Ram Katha. And finally, they were brought before Ram itself to recite the Ramayana. They were brought before Ram to recite his own life story in between the Ashwamedha sacrifice that he was performing. So during the Ashwamedha Yajna, there were breaks at different kinds of musicians, Puranic reciters, entertainers. All of them would come and perform in front of the king, like for entertainment in front of the king and the subjects. So like that, Lavakusha, they were also called to sing the Ramayana and entertain the king. So when they were called, they went in front of Lord Ram and they began to sing this beautiful Ramayana in front of Lord Ram as it was taught by Valmiki Muni. So while these two boys recited the Ramayana in such an impeccable manner, so beautifully, Ram listened to it with great curiosity and attention. And when they were singing the wonderful pastimes of Lord Ram, they began with the Balakanda pastimes of the Lord. When they were singing so beautifully, all the people in the assembly, they were actually struck with wonder looking at these two boys. They were turning to one another and they were telling, this is so amazing. Except their matted hair and deer skin, these two boys exactly look like Lord Ram. There is something special about these boys. So like this, there were a lot of whispers in the crowd and people were talking about their beauty and their resemblance to Lord Ram. So when Lavakusha suspended their recitation for some period in between the sacrifice, Ram was actually very pleased. He hadn't finished hearing the entire song of the Ramayana, but still he had heard a part of it. He was extremely pleased with the way these two little boys were singing. So he ordered Lakshmana to give these two Muni Balakas, that is these ascetic boys, 18,000 gold coins, costly garments, and whatever else they wanted. So at that time, when they were offered these gifts, Lavakusha, accepting the words of their spiritual master Valmiki, refused them. They said, what is the use of gold coins for ascetics who just live on fruits and roots? We don't want all these. Lord Ram was very, very astonished and he asked them, so my dear boys, just tell me, how many parts are there to this beautiful epic poem? Which rishi has composed it? Where did you learn this poem? So at that time when they were asked like this, the twins told their father, of course for now he was the king, the twins told the king, O king, the great sage Valmiki Muni, he is our spiritual master and he is the author of this great literature called the Valmiki Ramayana that narrates the entire history of your life. And this poem consists of six parts. What are those six parts? Balakanda, Ayodhya Kanda, Aranya Kanda, Kishkinda Kanda, Sundara Kanda, and Yuddha Kanda. But there is also one additional part that describes your concluding pastimes called as Uttara Kanda. So, if you desire, we will recite the entire Ramayana. We have learned everything. And during the intervals of your sacrifice, we can finish reciting this entire Ramayana. So, Ram listened to the recitation with unlimited pleasure as Lavakusha. They began to continue to recite the Ramayana for many days. Then, while they were going on with the story, at one point, taking clues from the verses in the composition, Ram could conclude for sure. Ram had doubts, but he could conclude for sure because there were some verses that pointed to the fact that these two were the sons of Sita. And he could conclude for sure that there is no doubt about this. So Ram's heart started melting because he could understand that these two boys are actually the sons of Sita, his own children. And his heart started melting due to affection for his sons. And finally, after taking the matter very deeply, Ram, he called for his messengers and gave them an order. So Ram said, go at once to Valmiki's ashram and please request Valmiki Muni to send back Sita. I want to take back Sita with the approval of all the citizens of this Ayodhya kingdom. Because she is so pure, there is no sin in her. So if the citizens can be convinced, I really want to bring back Sita. So the messenger, he went immediately to Valmiki's ashram with this message. And he told Valmiki Muni that Ramchandra wants to take back Sita with your permission. But then when Sita heard Ram's message, she actually couldn't accept the proposal. She was not ready to take any more trials from all the citizens. But however, Valmiki, he decided that he would take Sita to Ayodhya and then there we'll see what happens. So however, Sita had taken a very firm decision in her mind. She didn't want to go again vow in front of the Ayodhya citizens. She didn't want to go through all this ordeal. But anyhow, she dressed in nice beautiful reddish cloth in a beautiful red sari and she started out for Ayodhya along with Valmiki. And a large crowd had gathered from all corners of this Koshala kingdom to witness this arrival of Sita and she coming back to the Ayodhya kingdom. In fact, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, all the other celestials, all the rishis, everybody, Gandharvas, Chanaras, everybody, they came to witness Sita. Valmiki then arrived. He was followed by Sita and her head was bent low and her palms joined. Tears filled her large eyes and Ramchandra, her lord, was firmly fixed in her heart. So while all these assembled citizens, they looked on, Valmiki approached Lord Ram and said, I have brought your Sita. Rama, although you love Sita deeply and you were convinced of her innocence and she was separated from you because of the opinions of these unscrupulous persons, but by the dint of my spiritual vision, I can understand that Sita is perfectly pure. So I have come here to proclaim this truth in front of you and in front of all these citizens. Sita is undoubtedly pure. So Valmiki made this statement in front of the entire assembly. At that time, Ram gazed upon Sita with so much love for a few minutes. Then he announced, Ram began speaking to the assembly. He said, see, Valmiki Rishi has declared in this assembly that Sita is pure and I accept it. Previously, the demigods had already testified this matter of Sita's purity in Lanka. And I so happily brought Sita back to Ayodhya after this. She already went through a trial. Everyone was convinced there in Lanka and I brought her back to Ayodhya. But after she came, still people began criticizing us. And with great reluctance, I had to send her away for the well-being of all of them. Now I have decided that if Sita can again prove her innocence before this assembly of the Ayodhya, this Ayodhya kingdom, I will once again accept her as my wife that I always dearly love. At this time, everyone was silent and they all waited for Sita to speak up. Everyone's eyes were fixed upon Sita. Sita lowered her head. She bent downwards. And after a short pause, Sita began to speak within the hearing of all the people who were assembled there. Sita said, she called out, O God of Earth, please hear my petition. If since the time of my marriage, I have never thought of anyone but Ram, if I have never loved anyone other than my husband, then grant me shelter. In thought, in word, in action, if I have only dwelt in the thoughts of Ram and no one else, then please give me a place within you so that I don't have to experience the shame of facing these slanderous and fault-finding people. So as Sita was speaking, the earth suddenly opened up. And from out of the crevice, goddess Bhumi Devi majestically arose, seated upon a beautiful celestial throne that was adorned with divine serpents. And this beautiful goddess Bhumi Devi, she smilingly welcomed Sita, took her in her arms, and asked her to seat in front, next to her on the throne. Then all the beings on the sky and on the earth and everybody looked in astonishment. And everyone started showering flowers. There was a huge uproar. Everyone was exclaiming. They were praising the great glorious character of Sita. And they considered this to be a confirmation of her purity. When she said, Bhumi Devi appeared, Bhumi Devi appeared. So they saw this and they thought, oh, wow, Sita is so wonderful. And from the heavens, all the demigods, they showered flowers, and everyone were singing and playing musical instruments. But then they thought, this is, you know, Sita will come back to Ayodhya. But then Sita disappeared from sight. The entire earth actually closed together. It just closed up. So Sita sat next to Bhumi Devi, and she descended into the crevice of the earth. She just went inside along with her mother. So when Sita disappeared from sight and she entered the interior of the earth, Ram picked up the staff and he had been using for sacrifice, and leaning on it, he began to cry with intolerable grief. His eyes were filled up with tears, and he, at the same time, he was so angry within his mind. Ram lowered his head and he declared, "Hey earth, you better return my Sita immediately, or else I will open you up. Please, please return my Sita back. Otherwise, you take me inside. You, I want to be reunited with Sita. If Sita is your daughter, I am your son-in-law. Give me space within yourself. I want to come and unite with my Sita. Give me Sita back. Otherwise, I will crush all your mountains. I will burn your forests, and I'll smash this entire earth into atoms." So Ram was so angry. He was so upset. He was crying. And he was screaming to Goddess Earth, asking her to either return Sita back to him or take him within her crevices so that he could unite with Sita inside Earth. Lord Brahma, who had appeared there, he was watching all this. And then he said, "My dear Lord, please remember your identity. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are Lord Vishnu. And Sita is the Goddess of Fortune. She is not gone anywhere. She's just gone to the planet of the Nagas, where there is also an abode of Lord Vishnu. There is a residence of Lord Vishnu. She's anyhow united with you there. She's gone there to that abode. And very soon from there, she will come to the transcendental abode of Vaikuntha in your spiritual Ayodhya Dham. And she will reunite with you again there. So you are a big hero, and you are the Lord of this universe. And you are here for a particular mission. Okay, and should I remind you of your divine position? Give up your grief, Ram. Please give up your grief. You have some more years of rule. Give up this grief and go and hear from your sons the concluding part of the Valmiki Ramayana that describes the closing pastimes of yourself." Lord Brahma said, "Please go and listen to this epic poem. It was composed by Valmiki, and this Ramayana or this epic will spread your glory throughout the three worlds as long as this universe continues to exist." So saying like this, Lord Brahma disappeared from his view. Then Ram went to Valmiki's ashram along with his two dear sons, Lavakusha, who were lamenting so much for the disappearance of their mother. And after passing the night grieving over their loss of Sita Devi, Ram summoned all the rishis and then requested his two sons to recite the Uttarakanda of the Ramayana. So that is what we are reciting now. So Ram then returned to Ayodhya, but then he soon found his life to be completely barren without his dear wife Sita. Ram had made a beautiful golden deity of Sita, and whenever he performed any religious function, he had this murti occupy the wife's place next to him. So Ram continued to rule his kingdom strictly according to all religious principles with Sita Devi next to him in the form of her Vigraha, and rains showered forth regularly, crops were abundant, and everywhere there were only signs of prosperity. So this went on and on and on, and Ram was still ruling, and many years later Kaushalya Devi passed away. Then Sumitra Devi and then Kaikeyi, all of them passed away, and they got reunited with Maharaj Dasharath in the higher realms. And sometime later, Yudhajit, who is the king of the KKR dynasty, who is actually the brother of Kaikeyi, he came to see Lord Ram at Ayodhya, and he requested Lord Ram that he wanted someone to go and conquer over a particular Gandharva king called as Sailusha, who was ruling the Gandharva area with his 100 sons. And this area was north of the river Sindhu. Okay, north of river Sindhu, these Gandharvas had occupied. And apparently, Yudhajit had a request that Lord Ram should send someone to conquer that area and bring even this area under his kingdom. So Ram immediately appointed Bharata's two sons, because this is Kaikeyi's kingdom, if you look at it, and Kaikeyi's son is Bharata. So he thought Bharata's sons would be the most appropriate people to go and rule in that area. Okay. So he called, Bharata had two sons. Their names were Taksha and Pushkala. Okay. So he called them and he asked them to go to the Gandharva kingdom along with their father Bharata and go and conquer that area, win over the Gandharvas and establish their kingdoms. So based on the orders of Lord Sri Ram, Bharata along with his two sons, they went to this area that is north of river Sindhu, and they won over the Gandharvas and they established two big cities known as Takshashila, or today it is known as Taxila, which is in Pakistan, and Pushkala or Pushkalavati, which is also around this territory. It is around the territory of Gandhar, okay? Gandhara, that is the region we call as Gandhara in Sanskrit, or it is also known as the Kandahar area. So both his sons, Taksha and Pushkala, went and established kingdoms there. 5 years later, Bharata returned to Ayodhya. Then Ram appointed Lakshmana's two sons, Angada and Chandraketu, as the rulers of Harupatha and a territory known as Chandrakanta. I'm not able to find out where exactly these territories are, but I'm sure it is somewhere in the north. So the sons of Lakshmana were sent there along with Lakshmana. Lakshmana also accompanied his two sons. They went there and they got this area under their control. And Lakshman stayed with his sons for a year and he returned back to Ayodhya. So like this, the territories that were not yet brought under the complete authority of Lord Ram were conquered and they were brought under his control by his brothers and their sons. And remember, Shatrughna is already in the area of Mathura. He's taking care of that area. So all brothers went out to different directions with their sons and they got the different areas under control. So like this, 10,000 years had passed. Now, this is the 11,000th year of Ram's life in this pastime. And since that time for the closing of Lord Ram's earthly pastimes was nearing, time personified came to Ayodhya one day, disguising as a sage. Okay, disguising as a wandering ascetic, time personified took the body of a sage and he came there to Ayodhya to visit Ram in his palace. So after arriving at the palace gate, this time personified, he announced to Lakshmana, who was standing there, and he said, I am a messenger from Brahma and I have come on a very important mission. So I want to see Lord Ram immediately at once. Please take me to Lord Ram. So Lakshmana immediately understood that this is very important because this messenger is coming from Brahma himself. And he sent him in, and Ram received the sage. And after he had respectfully seated the sage, who was time personified, upon a golden throne, Ram asked him, so please tell me how I can serve you, what is the nature of your visit, and what is the message that you have come here to deliver. So at that time, when time personified was asked this question, this messenger of Brahma, the sage, he told, O king, if at all you honor the wishes of Brahma, then our meeting should be held in private. Because these words that I am going to speak and you are going to speak is not meant to be heard by anybody else. And anyone who overhears our conversation will soon meet with death. And Ram, you must promise me that if anyone comes and interrupts our meeting, you will unhesitatingly give up all connection with him and that person will soon meet with death. So Ram immediately gave that promise and he said, let it be so. And he looked at Lakshmana and he ordered Lakshmana to dismiss the doorman. And then he told Lakshmana, I want you to personally guard the entrance. This meeting must be in strict privacy. So never let anyone inside and you guard the doors. Let the doorman also leave now. So inside the palace room, only death personified, or Kala, or time personified, in the form of a messenger, and Lord Ram were there, and both of them started their conversation. So Kala said, Lord Brahma's message reads as follows. Let's listen to Brahma's message. Brahma's message read as, My Lord, you have appeared within this world at our request to relieve the burden of the earth. Now that Ravana has been killed and you have ruled the earth for a sufficient period of time, you now please return to your transcendental abode if you desire. O all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are the source of my strength and my very existence as well, because I took birth from a lotus that appeared from your navel. And you are the same Supreme Lord who earlier appeared as Vamana to relieve the distress of Indra. And you appear from time to time to protect your devotees. And now you have appeared to vanquish Ravana. So I offer my respectful obeisance unto you. It's time for you to return. So when the messenger read this beautiful message of Brahma, he smiled and he said, Yes, you have spoken well. All good fortune unto you. Please tell Brahma that because I have fulfilled the purpose of the demigods, I am going to return back to my spiritual abode very, very soon. So like this, they were conversing, and Ramchandra told that he is soon going to withdraw his pastimes. But it so happened that when Ram and the messenger were conversing, Urvasa Muni came to this royal palace. So when Lakshman went to receive him, Urvasa Muni insisted that he was there on a very urgent business and he only wanted to see Lord Ram, and that too he wanted to see Ram immediately. But then Lakshmana explained to Urvasa Muni that Ram was in a very important private meeting and he had given very strict instructions that nobody can interrupt them under any circumstance. So he requested Urvasa Muni to wait a bit. But when Urvasa Muni heard these words from Lakshmana, he lost his temper. He got very, very angry. And with fiery eyes, he started screaming. He said, Go and announce my presence at once. You're so foolish. Are you trying to disobey me? If you do so, I will curse Ram. I will curse Bharata. I will curse you. I will curse Shatrughna. I will curse all your descendants and this entire Ikshvaku dynasty. I will curse everybody. The whole Kosala kingdom will be cursed. So Lakshmana got very scared and he thought, what is this? Then Durvasa told him, you're trying to test my patience. I'm losing my patience. You better go at once now. So Lakshman knew that to interrupt Ram's conversation would bring about his death for sure and separation from Ram. But still, he thought about Durvasa's curse. And he concluded that it would be better if he alone suffers rather than cause everyone's ruination. So out of goodness, actually Lakshmana was even ready to give up his life. And he went forward and he went to the room and he walked inside the room, interrupting their conversation. He went to Lord Ram and informed Ram that Urvasa Muni is here. He's at the door and he wants to see you immediately. So Ramchandra, he took leave of Kala immediately and he hurried to go and meet Sage Durvasa. He stood before Durvasa Muni with folded hands and he asked, O best of the Brahmanas, what happened? It seems that you were in a hurry. How can I please you? So at that time, Durvasa told him, I have just completed 1,000-year fast. What are you going to give me to eat? Ram quickly, he provided Durvasa with a very sumptuous feast and satisfied the sage. And Durvasa Rishi became very, very pleased. But after Durvasa's departure, Ram remembered the promise he had made to time personified, Kala. What promise did he make? If anyone interrupts, that person will be separated from him and he has to meet with death. So it was such a horrible thing. Fear overwhelmed Ram. His most intimate associate, Lakshmana, was to be separated from him and he was to die. Ram stood motionless. He felt that his entire life had gone. His head was bowing down and he was extremely dejected. And just the thought that he had to be separated from Lakshmana was so horrifying for him. He He was just separated from his dear wife Sita. Now it was Lakshmana. So Ram felt miserable. But then Lakshmana approached his grieving brother and he told him, Ramchandra, my dear brother, please don't lament. Whatever has happened is inevitable. All of us are under the control of destiny. But duty must be carried out without any attachment or aversion. You are known to keep up your promise. And please don't hesitate to banish me now. It is okay. So, but you must never give up on your dharma. You are known for righteousness. You are known to keep up your promise. All your life, you had to undergo separations. So now it's me. It's okay. So at that time, Ram summoned his ministers. And he described to his ministers all that had happened. And he asked them for advice. So at that time, Vasishtha said, my dear Ram, by the dint of my yogic power, I could already foresee all this. I knew all this was going to happen. But anyhow, you have to keep up your promise. Otherwise, your lifelong adherence to righteousness will all become a waste. And with the decay of religious principles, the world will gradually perish. So therefore, you, being the role model, you should stick to your words and you must banish Lakshmana. Ram appeared to think over this matter very deeply. And then finally, he announced to the entire assembly, he said, in order to stick to righteousness, I order that my dear brother Lakshmana be banished from Ayodhya. All the ministers, they applauded Ram's decision. And it is interesting to see how Lakshmana serves his brother. He decided to leave before his brother. He decided to wind up his pastimes before Ram's pastimes so that he could go and receive him in the spiritual abode comfortably. So Lakshmana, he went to the banks of the river Sarayu. He began to absorb his mind in the practice of mystic yoga. And when the time was ripe, without leaving his body, we know when they appear, when the Lord appears, be it Krishna Balram or Rama Lakshmana, without leaving their body, self same body, they go back. So he wound up his earthly pastimes and he went back to the spiritual world. After Lakshmana's disappearance, Ram decided to install Bharata on the royal throne, so that he could retire to the forest and ultimately he could retire and follow the path of Lakshmana. This was Ram's plan, that he wanted to go to the forest, putting Bharata on throne. But then Bharata refused to sit on the throne. He said, I don't want to sit on the throne. If you're going to the forest, I'm also coming with you to the forest. I don't want the kingdom either. So at that time, Ram had no choice but to coronate his sons as the successors. So Lavakusha were the next successors of the Ayodhya kingdom. First, Ram divided his kingdom among his sons, giving Kusha the northern part of Kosala and Lava the southern part of the Kosala dynasty. So after the coronation ceremony was completed, Ram was very, very affectionately, he embraced his twin sons, gave them vast amounts of gold, jewels, chariots, horses, elephants, made sure that they are well equipped, and he took a very firm decision that he would retire now. So when the citizens had learned about Ram's intention to retire to the forest, they became so determined to follow him wherever he would go. Because the grief of separation for them from Ram was so unbearable. And Shatrughna heard this news while he was in Mathura. And he was also bent upon following Ram. So what he did, he coronated his son Subahu as the king of Mathura, and Shatrughati as the son of Vidisha kingdom. Vidisha kingdom is near Bhopal today. It is also called as Bilsa. This kingdom is known as Bilsa. It's near Bhopal. So he called his two sons, Subahu and Shatrughati, and he coronated them as the kings. And then he also went to Ayodhya so that he could follow his dear brother. In fact, out of love and devotion, each and every living entity in Ayodhya actually followed Ram to the forest. It is said, according to the Valmiki Ramayana and the Uttarakhanda, it is mentioned that not even a single animal was left behind. Everybody started following Ram. Everybody wanted to follow Ram to the forest. The news had reached the Vanaras. These Vanaras, they could change their forms at will. The bears, the Rakshasas, Rakshasa associates of the Lord, who were favorable. All of them, They all heard the news, and all of them immediately hurried to Ayodhya through air and through other methods. They instantly appeared in Ayodhya. And the sons of all the pious sages and the Brahmanas, all the Brahmanas and the sages who were living in the forest nearby, all the exalted personalities, all of them heard the news. All of them hurried to Ayodhya to follow Lord Ram. Actually, what Sugriva did was he immediately coronated Angada as the king of the Vanaras, and he also decided to accompany the Lord in his final journey. So everyone appeared there, and Vibhishan was also ready to follow Ram. But at that time, Ram requested Vibhishan to stay back and rule Lanka. And he told him, you continue to worship the Kuladeva of the Ikshvaku dynasty, who is Lord Vishnu, also known as Lord Jagannath or Ranganath. Today, we worship him as Lord Ranganath. So he told Vibhishan to stay back and take care of Lanka. He looked at Hanuman and he told him, actually, Hanuman, it's your desire that you want to stay back on earth. So wherever my pastimes are being sung, you will be automatically present there. So you will remain in the earthly realm. That's why we say, yatra yatra raghunatha kirtanam tatra tatra krita mastakanchalim. Wherever the pastimes of Lord Ram is sung, Hanuman is present there. He told Jambavan, Mainda, Dvivida, all the three of them to also stay back till the end of Kali Yuga. So, five of them were asked to stay back. Who are the five of them? Jambavan, Mainda, Dvivida, Hanuman and Vibhishan. We know later Dvivida encountered Krishna, right? Krishna Balram. So they were asked to stay back till the end of that particular age. Jambavan, Mainda, Dvivida, Vibhishan and Hanuman. Five of them were asked to stay back. And the rest of the monkeys and the bears went on along with Lord Ram. So the next morning, Ram called, the procession to the forest began. Okay, Ram was going to the forest and all these people had were collected in Ayodhya. They had all decided to follow Lord Ram. So the next day morning, Ram called for the chief priest and who's the chief priest? Vasishta. So he asked the chief priest and the Brahmanas to bring the fire from the Agnihotra ceremonies that he had performed. One small thing here. In those days, every grihastha used to perform fire sacrifices at their home. Okay, that fire would keep burning all the time. Okay, they had different sacrifices to perform in different sandhyas. So generally, in those days, we're talking about several ages ago, what they used to do is when the person, we are talking about normal human beings, we are not talking about Lord Ramchandra here, when the person dies, the person's body would be cremated from the fire that comes from that sacrifice. You don't light up a matchbox or you don't open up a cigarette lighter and burn the body. No. The fire stick or the torch or the firewood that comes from that sacrifice actually burns the body. So that Agnihotra sacrifice had to be performed in every household, every day. Continuously the fire should burn. Okay, that was the standard in the Vedic tradition those days. So Ramchandra asked the priest to hold the torch, that was a torch of fire from the Agnihotra sacrifice, and walk in front. So this is just an indication that Ram is going to end his pastimes. Of course, Ram's body is not going to be burned because his body is transcendental. He's just going to disappear. But still, as a mark of tradition, he was this chief priest was holding that torch of fire, and he was walking in front. So what else were there? The umbrella from his Vajapaya sacrifices. Ramchandra, he performed so many, 10,000 Ashwamedha Yajnas, it is mentioned. He performed several Vajapaya sacrifices. Like this, Ramchandra has performed so many sacrifices in his entire reign. So, and of course, the Agnihotra ceremonies also in his home. So all these are taken till the end. They are actually follow Lord Ramchandra till the end of his pastimes. So the umbrella from the Vajapaya sacrifices and the torch of fire from the Agnihotra ceremony were actually taken in the front. Sage Vasishta was leading the entire group. He was chanting Vedic mantras and all of them started for Lord Ram's final journey. Lord Ram was wearing very beautiful garments, very fine garments. He was chanting mantras in his lips holding the beautiful Kusha grass, and he started walking forward. As Lord Ram walked along, everyone could see that he was exhibiting the mood of complete detachment and indifference, and he was completely preparing to give up the world. And at that time, it was so beautiful. This whole sight was so beautiful to watch. It so happened, as Ram was walking, the potencies of Lord Ram appeared in their personified forms, okay, in order to accompany him during this occasion. So who are the potencies? Sri Devi, Sri, she walked to Rama's right. Bhumi Devi, she walked to the left. Shakti walked in the front. His weapons personified, all the weapons of the Lord into personification forms, and they started walking with the Lord. And all the other innumerable energies of the Lord, including Omkara, Gayatri, the Vedas personified, everyone, they continued to walk alongside Lord Ram in the procession. And behind all the energies and the weapons of the Lord, next in the procession came Bharata Shatrughna and their families. And with them, behind them were the other Brahmanas. And behind the Brahmanas and their families walked the rest of all the citizens of Ayodhya according to their position. And at last came all the animals. And behind the animals, even the plants and the immovable objects, every blade of grass followed Ram. No single entity remained back in Ayodhya. Everybody followed him. When Ram went, he took back the entire Ayodhya with him. He didn't leave a single blade of grass. Everybody followed Ram. And then when he reached the banks of the river Sarayu, Ram paused. And at that time, Lord Brahma with all the demigods appeared there, and they were so thankful for the Lord that he had appeared to, you know, protect all the devotees and conquer Ravana and save all the demigods. And everyone was showering flowers. The Gandharvas and the Apsaras were dancing and singing, and there were gentle, sweet smelling breezes giving a beautiful farewell for Lord Ram. So after some time, as Lord Ram proceeded to enter the water with his beautiful lotus feet, Lord Brahma began offering prayers. He said, "O Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are now concluding your earthly pastimes and you are preparing to return back to your transcendental abode, which is much beyond this material world. You are indeed the eternal Vishnu, and although you appear in various incarnations, your body is unchanging and it is original. It is you alone who is the cause of all causes and the support of this entire existence. Everything is part and parcel of you, and you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, the source of all emanations. O Lord, you have kindly appeared here to remove the burden of the earth. So we all offer our respectful obeisances unto you again and again and again." After the final prayers were complete, the portions of the demigods who appeared to assist Lord Ram returned back to their original position. And then first Bharata and Shatrughna entered Sarayu and they disappeared. Then Lord Ram entered Sarayu and returned to his original abode. And in fact, not only the four sons of Dasharath, but also all of their followers, everybody in Ayodhya who all followed Ram went and took bath in the Sarayu. All of them attained the Vaikuntha planet known as Saketa Dham, or the spiritual Ayodhya Dham, where Lord eternally resides. So Ayodhya, everybody went away to the spiritual world, right? So Ayodhya was pretty much desolate. Nobody was there at that time after the departure of Lord Ram. But later it was inhabited later this Ayodhya came to be inhabited during the reign of King Rishabha. Till then, it remained desolate, this whole region of the capital of Ayodhya. Okay. So, like this, everyone disappeared and they went back to the spiritual world, and Lord Ramchandra united with Sita Devi there, and all the brothers came and took back their positions, and all the residents of Ayodhya achieved the spiritual kingdom. So, with this, we conclude the most beautiful transcendental narration of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Lord Ram, and this epic known as Ramayana, which was composed by the great Rishi and devotee Valmiki Muni. So I'll read the Palashruti. We have already read this after the Yuddhakanda, but there is one after the Uttarakanda, so I'll read that and then we can conclude. Palashruti. Ramayana bestows longevity, fortune and pleasure. The hearing of a single verse has the potency to eradicate all sins, and it is equal to the Vedas. So, one must recite the Ramayana even during funeral rites. A sonless person obtains a son, a poor man obtains wealth, and one is completely absolved of all sins committed by that person in a day, even if he reads one verse from the Ramayana. A man gets the retribution of performing 1,000 Ashwamedha Yajnas, 10,000 Vajapaya Yajnas, just by listening to one of the cantos of the Ramayana. One must listen to Ramayana in the morning, afternoon and evening. And he is supposed to have visited all the holy places and taken bath in all the holy rivers if he has heard the Ramayana. One who listens to the Ramayana with faith will go back to the spiritual world. Even his ancestors, his fathers, grandfathers, great-grandfathers, all of them, at least 3 to 4 generations is mentioned, will attain the Lord's abode. For this reason, those who seek liberation from the cycle of repeated birth and death must always relish the great transcendental literature, Ramayana. The recitation of Ramayana grants one all the fruits of dharma, artha, kama and moksha, and even beyond that, it helps one to advance towards life's ultimate goal, the development of pure love of God. May all the listeners of this epic poem become blessed and inspired in Krishna consciousness. May the transcendental forms of Sita and Lord Ram remain always situated within your hearts. So with this I conclude. Hare Krishna. All glories to all our acharyas and everyone else, and all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you all. All glories to you listeners. Thank you all so much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, please. Sorry, Mataji, please go ahead.
Go ahead, Mataji.
Yeah, very wonderful class, Mataji. And
Hare.
Yeah, I have a few questions. I hope I would recover after asking one question after another. So,
yes,
am I audible properly, because I have logged in through laptop?
Sure, you are audible. Yes, Mataji, please go ahead. I'll try and see if I can answer. Go ahead, Mataji.
Okay. So, my first question is, when that Kal came to Lord Ram to tell about his departure, so then he took promise from Lord Ram that nobody should listen about his conversation, between their conversation. So then Lakshman got punishment. But how come their conversation, we know about their conversation. So that means Valmiki was also listening, right? So why he did not get punishment?
Why Valmiki didn't get punishment is the question?
Yes.
Okay. See, Valmiki is a seer of the past, present and future. Initially, in the in the Balakanda, it is mentioned that he could see the entire, how Valmiki began seeing the Ramayana and he started writing it. So with a spiritual vision, the whole of Ramayana was playing on the palm, on his palms, like a movie. Okay, so he was seeing and writing. That's what says the Balakanda. The Balakanda says that initially, like in those days, they had this, there was a methodology, okay, like certain saints, they used to have this power to see the present, future and the past by their yogic methodologies. So in the beginning it says that Valmiki Ramayana was seen by Valmiki in the palm of his hands. He was able to see. So this was not like he's going and interrupting their conversation or walking inside the room. So then, that's the reason why it is said that there is no curse for Valmiki. So it's not like a direct interruption, right, Mataji? It's more like visualizing the whole thing.
Okay.
Does that kind of answer?
Yes, Mataji, sure. My other question is that you were talking about Dravida, right? Who stayed back at Earth. Was he the same monkey who was there in Krishna Leela time?
Yes, Mataji, you are right, yeah.
So was he the associate of Krishna or means like who was he? I could not.
And he was killed by Krishna Balram because it is who's this Baladev Vidya, no, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in one of the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in one of the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam writes about this, that apparently he had some kind of he made an offense to Lakshmana. He felt that Lord Ramachandra was more capable than Lakshmana. It was a mental offense that he had committed. So he had to stay back and he had to be killed in the hands of Balaram. So there is an explanation for this, and it is written that he had to stay back because he had to ultimately be killed by Balaram. So because of an offense that he committed to Lakshmana.
Okay. Thank you, Mataji. And one more question is, when you were mentioning that we have also heard that Ramji has he had the golden deity of Sita Devi. So do we have that deity still on the planet Earth, or that deity got disappeared somewhere?
So this is a good question. Actually, there is one temple in South India which claims to have this original deity of Sita Devi. And I have heard this from the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, that this deity is still there. Now, we don't know, we don't have proof, but this is what I have heard. And I can give you the reference for the temple. Okay? So it is,
yeah, sure.
That is the claim. Yeah.
Yeah, sure, Mataji. Means like if you know about the temple name, and I would love to see that.
Definitely. Sure, Mataji. I will send it to you. I'll probably find the name of the temple and the link, and I'll send it across in the group. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much. And one last question. That in the beginning you were mentioning. Hey, Govinda. In the beginning you were mentioning about Agastya Muni. So was he the same Agastya Muni who drank the water of sea during that Ganga Ji Leela?
Yes, it is the same Agastya Muni, and the conversation between Agastya and Rama is actually the beginning of the Uttarakhanda. So it is the same Agastya Muni who comes in all the ages. He is always present and all the time. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mataji. Thank you for very wonderful class.
Thank you so much, Mataji. Thank you so much, Ishwari Kumari, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prithvi Lasin, Mataji. Very, very wonderful. I have one request. Is it possible for you to put all these episodes in YouTube? So can be accessed to Ramayana, no?
Yes, Mataji, I will do that. Yes, I am thinking, yes, I will collect everything and I will put it on YouTube. Sure, Mataji, I'll do that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Karmodaki Mataji, for all your blessings and your continuous encouragement on the call, listening to the entire series. Thank you so much, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
It's your mercy that we are able to hear. Thank you.
So, Mataji, Ramayana is finished?
Yes, Mataji.
Oh, Krishna. So, this was my first class, and it happened to be our last class on this topic. So, my God.
It's a teaser. It's a teaser. Now you have to go and look for the rest and listen to them, or else BTV Last Night Mataji has to start all over again. Whatever to do.
Please, Mataji, please restart it.
Yeah, you should start over again.
Hare Krishna, Prithvi Vilasan. Thank you again.
I put all the recordings in one place. Yeah. I put everything in one place.
That'd
thank
be
you,
nice.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Prithvi Vilasan. So again, as Mataji's all were saying, Komodakini Srimati, wonderful, wonderful class. And I am sorry it ended, and I want you to start over. But as you said, it's as long as Ramayana is heard, then the world is benefited. So we shall keep it going, at least in our pocket. One question I had the same question that Ishri Mataji had about Divida. I forgot what the story was behind him. But thanks for reminding us. So why did Ramachandra have to have Sita Devi go through it again? You know, I mean, she's been through it. Why again in front of everybody one more time? I mean, when would it be enough?
Yeah, so that is the thing that was explained, right? He also says that when he was lamenting, saying that she was already testified, the demigods gave the approval. I mean, like they said that she is pure. Everything was over in Lanka already. But then again,
right,
after coming to Ayodhya, again the people started doubting her, and you know, it was a lot of drama even after coming back. So, you know, because of the, I mean, ultimately it is like the acceptance of the people that their queen is pure, you know, that was the problem. So he wanted to somehow take her back, and that too, he saw Lavakusha and he felt that, you know, it was high time that she comes back. It was enough, the separation was enough. But then if the citizens are convinced with the, you know, with her again testifying herself, it would be easier, right, to just take her back. So it was after all for the citizens that he asked her to leave. So it was again like another trial kind of a situation. So he laments right there. He kind of vents out saying that I have to do this again and again, and nobody, you know, he feels very bad about it. But then Sita is very frustrated by now, and she's like, you know what, I don't want to prove myself to anyone else. You know, anyhow they're going to find faults. Anyhow they're going to do this all over again. So what, I did it in Lanka, now I'm doing it in Ayodhya, tomorrow it will be some other place. So just, I'm giving up, you know.
Another question I had is, so Ashwamedha Rajasuya, now Rajasuya Yajna is the one where the horse is left and it goes after to the different places and they have to fight it, yes?
Yeah, yeah.
And the Ashwamedha, so, now what's, when you said, because you were saying that there's, you know, that Lakshmana had said you don't need to
so
do that.
Somehow, I thought someone will ask this question, and I was trying so hard to research on this topic. So I did ask a lot of people, not a lot, some people about this, because it was too late by the time I realized that this question will come. So I asked a few people about this, and I was trying to find out the answer, and this is what I could find out. So there are subtle differences between the Rajasuya Yajna and the Ashwamedha Yajna. As far as the Rajasuya Yajna goes, this was conducted by many kings, including King Yudhishthira Maharaj. And the process, or there are subtle differences in the way the sacrifice was performed between Rajasuya Yajna and Ashwamedha Yajna. There are subtle differences. In the Rajasuya Yajna also, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says that the horse was let loose. Okay, even here also you will find a similar procedure, but the cause or the end result of performing the two yajnas seem to be a little different. Rajasuya Yajna is trying to say that you are the emperor of the world, and any king who doesn't agree to you must either fight you or give you huge contributions and say that he surrendered to you. Okay, so this is the basic format of a Rajasuya Yajna. And other than that, there are a lot of similarities in the way the sacrifice itself is conducted. And towards the end, how it's concluded is also a little different. They offer the soma juice in the fire, and then, you know, there are some differences in the methodologies. But whereas Ashwamedha Yajna, both are very purifying again, and both of them are very good for the kingdom, the citizens, the prosperity, and also for the king. It can absolve anyone of very high sins also, both. But Ashwamedha Yajna apparently is more strenuous, more difficult to perform. It is generally performed by a person who is an expert in or rather a great established king who doesn't even have to prove to the world that he is the emperor. Like for the case of Ramchandra, he was completely capable of even performing any kind of Rajasuya Yajna. It is actually a very small yajna for him. Okay, so as far as Ashwamedha is concerned, it is more for increasing the profile of the king. It is not about saying that, oh, he's the emperor and he has conquered me. No, that is not the idea behind the performance of the Ashwamedha Yajna. Rather, it is more like improving the profile of a king, giving more credits to him. And it's very difficult to perform, and more pious benefits are seen from the Ashwamedha Yajna. The way the Ashwamedha Yajna is performed is also slightly different. The final ending is different. The procedures are a little different. Here also the horse is let loose. But here, some people may, the only difference I could probably see is there, the challengers would come and, you know, fight, okay? And there will be a lot of loss in the sense where Bharata explains a lot of huge armies, a lot of people will be involved and there will be a huge loss and there will be a lot of war. Whereas in the Ashwamedha Yajna, usually there are not much competitors. Like, you know, generally people accept and they are like, good, it's good for the kingdom. And unless someone is envious, they don't stop the horse. Okay? So there are some subtle differences in the way it's carried out, but it was complicated.
Okay, so basically it's the mood, in which they've done it, the understanding for which they've done it. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And there are so many other reasons that I could find, which I don't know. I'm not able to, you know, like give a proper authoritative answer on this part.
Okay.
But however, there are other things that, you know, most of the kingdom was already conquered. I mean, everyone was already subordinate to Lord Ram, whereas there were some places and some tribal areas where there were some people who did not probably accept Lord Ram as the ultimate emperor. Like you see that the sons of Bharata and Lakshmana, later they had to go and bring some kingdoms under control. So basically the Ashwamedha Yajna kind of covers the dense thick forests and other places also where the horses like to go. So there are some answers like that. I don't know if it is very convincing, but these are the different answers that is given. So the very profile or the very aim at which or the mood in which the two yajnas are performed are slightly different. Mm-hmm. And Bharata's point was that, you know, there are less number of killings. And also he quotes, Ram also quotes history, Lakshmana also quotes history. We see that there were a lot of fights with respect to the Rajasuya Yajna. There was a lot of life loss in the Rajasuya Yajna just to make that one Yajna possible. Whereas Ashwamedha Yajna was more peaceful, you know. So
that's all. There's no need to. There's one other question I had. So do we know, I don't know if it matters, but so after the sons of Ram took over. So is that, are they, what are they, I mean, they're sons of the Lord, but are they also personalities? Are they divine personalities? Are they?
It's not mentioned that they were divine personalities because Vasudeva, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, Shankarsana, all of them were the four brothers, right? So the four brothers were divine. And they went back.
Right.
But the sons, Lavakusha, are not mentioned as being divine. In the sense as Vishnu Tattva. They are not mentioned as being Vishnu Tattva.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mataji, for everything. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Priti Vilasini, Mataji. Very so much details, you know, so much research you have done on that. So Kamunaki Mataji says, like, put it on YouTube so we can hear that over and over again.
Thank you so much, Shama Gauri Mataji, for your encouragement, and thank you so much. Yes, we will put it on YouTube, sure, Mataji, definitely.
Thank you,
Mataji. Thank you. Anyone else has any questions, comments, or anything to share? Any realizations? Hare Krishna, Govinda.
Nice class.
Thank you, Govinda. So nice of you to listen. Thank you so much. Thank you for your presence. Thank you so much, Mataji. Thank you all so much. We'll end the class. वांछा कल्पतरु व्यस्य कृपा सिंधुव्य एवच पतितानां पावनेव्य वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय श्रील प्रभु पाद की जय ऑल ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटी श्रीमद् वाल्मीकि रामायण की जय हरे कृष्ण
हां भगवान हनुमान जी की Hanuman ki jai. Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai.
Because Hanumanji wants to hear more and more. So that's why if you have on YouTube, then so many people also can, one who maybe sometimes first time they hear and they will like it and they will keep on hearing. So that's me. Hanumanji will be very, very pleased.
Jai. Jai Mataji. So true. Hanumanji ki jai.
Yeah. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.